hustle and flow originated because in South Memphis you saw this pimp hustling a white woman in this car.
Right, right.
Where does Black Snake Moan come from? Is there a seed there for this story?
Well, the seed really comes from me having really bad anxiety attacks when I was trying to get Hustle and Flow made. I was traveling constantly back and forth between Memphis and Los Angeles. I didn't have any money. I couldn't get a job because I was constantly being flown out there. Had to sleep on friends' couches and wasn't necessarily the best of environment for my marriage or for me to be a father. I just had, you know, we just had a baby. So there was this flight I took and I experienced something that I'd never experienced. It was just this, my heart just started pounding really, really hard and I couldn't get any oxygen and it was terrible. I mean, it was like, I thought I was having a heart attack. I called over the stewardess and I told her to get ready with the defibrillator that I was crashing. And she kind of squatted in the aisle next to me and said, I think you're having an anxiety attack or what they call panic attack. And I was like, no, I don't panic. I don't get afraid to fly. I've flown all my life. But my father died of a heart attack at 49. So you need to get ready. And the more she started talking to me about the sensations that I was feeling, it began to pass. So I thought maybe I had some reaction to something, maybe ate something crazy. But then after that meeting and I was coming back, I got back on the plane and my mind just kept going like, is that going to happen again? You know, that was so terrible. And the more I began obsessing about it, and once that pilot hit the throttle, I was awful. It was a terrible feeling. Like I felt like I was on a roller coaster ride, but I was sitting still. And later I started talking to my wife about it and she had been experiencing the same things on freeways. And so I decided I'd write about it a little bit. And I had this image in my head that was kind of helping me a little bit that had come to me about me going through the front door of my granddad's house out in the woods in Rossville, Tennessee. And there was a radiator there. And there was this chain wrapped around it, and it was coiled down at the bottom, and it was like racing past me as if someone was running with the end of the chain, and it clanged up against the radiator. And once it clanged like that, it sounded almost like a church bell, just this bong. The feeling left me, and that's when I kind of got this idea that, well, maybe I can write this story that's about blues music, about anxiety music, fear music. And it didn't take too long for me to, change myself into, a hot girl wearing Daisy Duke shorts and, a crop top.
Let's talk about the timing of this, when this script was completed around the time that Hustle and Flow became a success, went to Sundance, you know, winning awards. And when did this fall in line with
Well, that? See, that's what's kind of interesting. Like, I wrote Hustle and Flow, and then I wrote Black Snake Moan. Thinking that Black Snake Moan would probably never get made. I mean, it's just such an outlandish scenario of this old black bluesman chaining up this white woman to cure her of this disorder that she had. And so after Hustle and Flow became this hit at Sundance, everybody in Hollywood wanted to know what I wanted to do next. And luckily I had a script. And even better, Singleton gave the script to Sam Jackson and he was like, I got to do this movie. So every studio who had Hustle and Flow and passed on it because they were concerned about the subject matter now was waiting for me to do like a sequel or some sort of buddy movie. Here comes the script, Black Snake Moan. And they're like, oh Lord, like we just went through this, you know, why are you pushing us? I gotta give credit where credit's due. And that's Brad Gray who was running Paramount. He invited me up to his house and he said, if you want to make this movie, I want to support you as, you know, I have other talented people and I want to support your talent and I'll support you in making this movie. So we were off and running with Black Snake Moan.
And that's a Blind Lemon Jefferson song.
It's what we named, I started to call this feeling Black Snake Moan. And the song by, as you put, Blind Lemon Jefferson, who, you know, surprise, was blind, and he began singing about things in his room he couldn't see. He was singing about snakes and scorpions and bugs and always wanting some pretty mama to come and get them and take them away. And that's how this feeling felt. It felt as if I didn't know when it was going to hit. I didn't know what triggered it. I didn't know what would really make it go away. And that's why I called it that. I know that many people read kind of like a sexual connotation into it, which is perfectly fine with me. You know, the blues is all about spirituality and sexuality, and you can't do a movie about the blues without a fair amount of taboo.
So at the time you wrote it, it was probably way too early to envision big names in roles because you hadn't.
Oh, no. Success. No, I really thought that I'd be shooting it on video out in my granddad's, you know, house out in Rossville. I thought I'd probably get some old bluesman to play the character and get a friend of mine in town, you know, in Memphis to play Ray, the hot girl. But, you know, things change. And suddenly Sam Jackson and Christina Ricci and Justin Timberlake are in my life. And now they're part of the movie.
One interview I read, you talked about taking Christina Ricci and Samuel L. Jackson out of their comfort zones.
Right.
Talk about their acceptance of these roles and, you know, why they were excited about doing the project.
Well, both of them really, really wanted to play these parts, and I think I understand why. I mean, if you look at their body of work, they understand making iconic characters. They understand pushing their own abilities and really delivering on some stellar performances. And I know many people that think, you know, I say Samuel L. Jackson and Christina Ricci, and they kind of, you know, tilt their head like, you know, that's kind of an odd pair. But you see the movie, and there's something about her eyes, and there's something about his eyes, and their expressiveness that are so unique. I mean, you know, there is no other person like Samuel L. Jackson. There is no other woman like Christina Ricci. I said we needed a versus movie. You know, whoever was going to be Lazarus and whoever was going to be Ray, it had to be like Samuel L. Jackson versus Christina Ricci. It had to be two powerhouse performances that you wanted to see in combat with each other.
Found you out by the side of the road. Looked like somebody took the beating on you pretty bad. You know who done that to you?
Where's Ronnie?
I don't know who that is.
No, wait. He left. Well, I don't got any money or anything, you know, for fixing me up.
I don't need none.
I guess I best be on my way.
Well, I think we need to talk some.
No, sir. I gotta be on my way.
Best get your wits about you before you do that. I want to tell you about that.
Why you got me chained?
Talk about the role that blues music plays in this film and how themes from it are identified in those two characters.
Well, you know, I tell people when it comes to the music in my movies, it's not the frosting, it's the cake. I mean, I listen to music and roll around in my car driving to Memphis, and it really isn't until I start seeing some imagery in my head while I'm listening to music that I can start probing those images and finding a story. Half of my job is kind of this detective thing. Like, I'll see, like, that image with the radiator and the chain and just think, well, you know, what the hell's that about? I got to figure something out. I got to figure out what led up to this image or what happened after it. And that's where it all starts. So if you're talking about the blues, you know, you're talking about taboo. But it was a music about fear and overcoming your fear. And I know historically, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, to some degree, young African Americans have somewhat abandoned blues. It's not a music that they really embrace or study. And I can understand in a historical context why that's the case. I think that when the 60s came about, a lot of the African American movement and civil rights was wanted to embrace a more empowering music. They did not want to go backwards. They didn't want to be singing about being tore down and almost level with the ground. You know, they wanted, you know, anthems of "We Shall Overcome," and no one really wanted to go backwards to that time. But the thing I try to remind everybody is, you know, these Delta bluesmen truly were pioneers, because you have to consider what they were singing about: social injustice. You know, the injustice of nature, like, you know, Charlie Patton singing about levees breaking and entire towns being flooded, but also the injustice of the heart. And that could be as simple as "my woman's left me," or, you know, "God, I'm going to die. And I, you know, I don't want to go to hell." And they would articulate it over and over again in their verse. And each time they articulated it, there'd be more power behind it. And I can't I can only believe that that was a turning point for a lot of these bluesmen, where they began to take control of their fear instead of it controlling them.
If you see my baby, they call her Alice Faye.
Yeah! You hold on, man! You just walk through the door. Yeah!
If you see my baby, they call her Alice.
She took this movie to Sundance, and where you had this huge success 2 years ago. Was it like been there, done that, or did you go in with a little bit of swagger because you had achieved what dozens of filmmakers can only dream of?
Well, I mean, it's weird. You know, you make that first movie and you think to yourself that, you know, I've got to make it. Like, I've got to figure out some way to just make this one movie, and then I can retire and I can die and live a happy life. But then after that first movie came out and I had the option to make more, you begin to really think about a body of work. And you think, wow, you know, what are going to be the expectations that people want? It's not so much a matter of topping it, but defining yourself. And I think that when I went back to Sundance, I had so many people, so many festival goers come up to me and say, you know, we were there for Hustle. We can't wait to see Black Snake Moan. And it was really the first time I got to thank those people for my career, because they were the ones that voted at best, you know, the audience award. They gave me my career to some extent. But, you know, 1,200 people giving a movie a standing ovation for Black Snake Moan is a pretty good way to come back to a festival. They really responded to it. They really loved it.
You thank the audience for changing your life. Have you had a chance to now and then stop and reflect Sundance 05 to the present, to you have another movie you're doing after this, to think about, you've been able to stay in Memphis by and large, but
right,
talk about the life that you have now.
Well, it's definitely more complicated. It's more complicated, but to some extent, I'm trying to keep it simple. I live in Memphis. I have to occasionally go out to Los Angeles and work. I have an apartment out there, so if my family wants to come out with me, my son can have his own room and his own toys. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm working in the entertainment business now. I mean, I'm developing scripts. I'm a producer. I have a company on the Paramount lot. We're trying to come out with some more movies in addition to the movies that I make. But I got to say, you know, there was a time 10 years ago here in Memphis, Tennessee, where out of our, you know, crappy little house on the dead end of Vinton Avenue, we were building sets and making shorts and making features when nobody was telling us to do it. And there was many times we started questioning why we were doing that. And now that we're, you know, enjoying some level of success, that's the victory. The victory is we pushed ourselves when no one was pushing us and when no one was paying us, and now we're a part of this industry.
I climb to the top of the tallest tree, but me the wind died down.
Me the wind died down.
I climb to the top of the tallest tree.